Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
New South Wales will face its biggest power reserve shortage on Wednesday night since this week's East Coast power crisis sparked blackout warnings. The Australian energy market operator late on a Tuesday warned of a gap in available resources from 5 p.m. Wednesday night through to 3:30 a.m. on Thursday. So Australia, New South Wales area, suffering from potential blackouts because of the cold. It seems to be a particularly cold winter. We are experiencing that here as well. Dr. Carl joins us from Australia. Good morning. How are you?
Very good, Dr. Howard. And look, have you got a computer screen near you that you can bring something up on it?
Sure.
Okay, go to your web browser and type in Null Earth.
Null?
Earth, and it'll take you to something like NullEarth.world or something like that.
Wait, Null Earth as in N-U-L-L, Earth.
Yep.
Okay, let's see where it takes me. Earth, global map of wind, weather, and O.
That's the one.
That's the one. Okay, I'm going to that
now,
as we speak.
Mm-hmm. Can you see South Africa there?
Yes.
Now, go down lower and you can see Antarctica, and then grab Antarctica with your mouse, click and drag, and bring up Antarctica until it sits in the middle of your screen.
Okay, I've done that.
Yeah. Now, notice a few things. Firstly, that there's a bunch of winds going around Antarctica. Do you get that impression?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Absolutely.
Right. And then secondly, that they're going clockwise.
Yes.
You've got that?
Yes.
And then thirdly, that there's a bunch of cyclones in there.
Uh-huh.
Can you see the cyclones spinning?
Yes.
Here's the weird thing. That wind that you're seeing going clockwise around the Antarctic is called the SAM, for Southern Annular Mode. I don't know why they call it that, but annular is a ring. And you're thinking, how can we have cyclones down there in the Antarctic? And the answer is that what drives a cyclone is not hot water, but water with a temperature difference between it and the land. So normally you see cyclones or hurricanes or whatever you call it, or typhoons, beginning near the equator where the water temperature is above 27. But you also have them in the Antarctic where the water temperature is minus 1.8 and the land temperature is, say, minus 30 or minus 40. And so that's enough to drive a cyclone. And you can see there's a cyclone down to the just off the coast of South Africa there. And so this southern annular mode, this ring, it can expand or it can contract. And when it contracts, you get all of the cyclones coming onto the Antarctic continent. And we don't call them cyclones, we call them blizzards. And I've been down in Antarctica on the land when we were stuck there by a blizzard. And we had to stay there for an extra week. We couldn't leave. The winds were up to 180 kilometres an hour.
Incredible.
But then sometimes the southern annular mode expands, which is what it's doing now. So we've been having really cold weather coming up from the Antarctic. And I do believe you might have something cold off the coast of Africa there down the bottom right-hand corner.
We do. In fact, Cape Town's in the midst of an incredibly powerful cold front, and that's now pushed its way all the way up to Johannesburg, and we're feeling it here as well. So a very powerful cold front hitting the Cape area at the moment.
So what we have in Australia is an energy supply system that has been built on fossil fuels, and at no stage has it been making a reliable fossil fuel system. It's been totally, here's a delicate word, suboptimal, which means not as good as it could have been.
Right.
And as a result, we've got a system that relies on fossil fuels, is very expensive, and it doesn't work.
Which makes no sense, given the fact that Australia has an incredible amount of sunshine in many parts as well, where renewable energy has got to be a good option, surely.
Yes, but the government has gone to a lot of trouble to block that, to put forward the fossil fuel subsidy. And in fact, if you look at the whole world with a global economy for the whole world of about $85 trillion, every year the governments of the world give to the fossil fuel companies about $5.9 trillion as a free present, as a subsidy that they can have and do whatever they want with. And that's about 8% of the global GDP, which is more than the global military budget that's been given as a free present to the fossil fuel companies, who are already wealthy enough. I guess they're like big tobacco. They've managed to get influence in high places. But anyway, so that explains why you're having a cold front in Joburg at the moment. Is that the right thing to call it Joburg? Am I allowed to call it Joburg?
You absolutely are. No problem with that. We do. So there is no problem with that at all. And so that is really, really fascinating. You know what I've also been wondering? Why do dogs tilt their heads when you speak to them?
There's a bunch of reasons, and we don't really know even today. But the first reason is it's easier for them to see you and your mouth. So here's an experiment for you and the audience to do. Make a little fist and see where your fingers leave a little tiny hole in the middle. Put that little hole on your nose and then try to look at somebody. And when you look at somebody with this fist sitting on your nose, you can't see their mouth. You have to tip your head to one side and tilt it a little bit so that that way you can see their mouth, so you can work out what they're saying to some degree. So that's one theory.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a slight tendency for dogs with long muzzles to do it more than dogs with short muzzles, like the flat-faced dogs, but it's not a very strong tendency. Do we know if that's the reason why? We don't know, number one. Number two, so that they can hear us better, they tip their ear and aim it at us. But on the other hand, they'll aim their ear where we're not when they tilt their head, and so that's probably not the reason. And maybe it's the third reason, which is that they're just dogs with a special talent. So most dogs don't recognize the words that we say, but about 8% of dogs are what we call gifted word learner dogs. And if you say this toy is called Fred and that toy is called Michelle, and you train them for 3 months, and then you go to another room with the dog and you say, go to the other room where the toys are and bring me Michelle, about 7 out of every 40 or maybe 15% of dogs are clever enough. Not clever. Clever is the wrong word. They've got this talent. So most dogs can't do it, but some dogs can. And when they can do it, it's not that they can just do one or two. They can do 10 or even 160 toys. And these dogs, they've just got this unique talent, just like some people are better at swimming or running. And for some unknown reason, about 80% of the gifted dogs tip their head every time the owner asks them to get a particular toy, but only 2% of the non-gifted dogs. Now, we don't know what's going on, but we've just found this relationship. And as we go looking further, we'll find out why exactly dogs go out of their way to look so adorably cute.
We don't know
why, but we know they do it.
Yeah, I think they can help themselves. They're just very, very crafty because they want to get us to do things for them. That's my theory, and I'm sticking to it. In the UK and the EU, apparently burning wood costs the health system £17 billion per year. Is this true?
Yes, mainly in health costs. So people get hurt by the polluted air. So this is burning wood, and another one-third of the air pollution in Europe is caused by burning fossil fuels because they've got very high standards. So two-thirds is from burning wood. And what you're finding is that there's a social cost of higher illness rates. So you're sick at home, so the family misses out on income. Plus, there's direct spending on healthcare because you've got to go and buy medicines for them and admit them into the health system. Plus, they die sooner. So that's taking money out of the system. So in the year 2018, of all the 45 million people who died, one-fifth died from an early death from air pollution. So it's costing them 17 billion euros or maybe 30 or so billion US dollars, or I don't know how much that is in rands. What would that be roughly in rands? I don't know.
Yeah, more than I can work out. But it's a significant number.
Sure. And the thing is, it's actually cheaper for the society to provide alternative forms of heating and cooking that don't involve burning. So it works out better in the long run for all of society, but in the short run, like today, sure, let's burn a bit of like a Van Gogh painting because it'll provide food for cooking the pasta tonight, and who cares what happens in 5 years in terms of dying sooner.
Yeah, absolutely fascinating. That's all we have time for, unfortunately. Dr. Cole, thank you as always. I greatly look forward to Wednesdays and to chatting to you about so many different subjects.